Roy Lawler, R-O-Y, L-A-W-L-E-R.
All right. You have the name of the company?
Right now we are Lawler Trombone Company. We were formerly Lawler Trumpets Incorporated. When I first established business in 1985 in Florida, we were Florida Brass Instruments, but it grew as I grew into my own product with the trumpets and trombones. We mainly focused on trumpets, and that's when we changed the name to Lawler Trumpets.
Yeah, yeah, all right. We'll come back to why the migration between instruments in a minute, but let's start with some basics. Are you a Tennessee native?
Nope, I was born and raised in Miami, Florida, south of Miami to be exact. Homestead is the name of the city. And grew up there, pretty much there. My parents kind of migrated south. They were born and raised in Miami, and as well as my grandfather. So I'm actually a native Floridian. But moved out of Florida in 2005. So we've been in Tennessee for over 10 years.
Yeah, and why that move?
Well, originally we had our business in your typical commercial area of Longwood, Florida, which is Central Florida, near Orlando. That's a suburb of Orlando. And in a warehouse district and such, and we kind of had the idea that since it was kind of very specialized, that we would try moving it to our home in Florida, because we had some acreage and we were able to put a shop there, and it worked out really great. And then the next thing was, well, we don't have to be in Central Florida. We really liked Tennessee. Both Tish and I, my wife, we visited Tennessee, and she's originally from Pennsylvania, so she liked the mountains, and I did too. Always, I went to school up north, so just liked the difference. Florida is wonderful, but I'm not a golfer or a tennis player or a year-round a recreational type guy, so I didn't have that draw. So we decided and certainly prayed about it, and the Lord led us out of Florida to Decatur, Tennessee. That's where we landed first. And we were there for 4 years, and then eventually moved to Shelbyville, Tennessee. And probably your next question is, why Shelbyville? Well, that's because of a church. We really wanted to be under the preaching of Jonathan Sims at Shelbyville Mills Baptist Church. The Lord just really put all that in place. We had been trying to find a expository preaching church, and that we just couldn't find one in the area we were in. And we heard him preach in Chattanooga, and one thing led to another to the point of moving. It was a little bit too much of a... It was a 2.5-hour drive from Chattanooga to Shelbyville, so we just couldn't continue to do that. So we just left it in the Lord's hands and managed to sell our house there and move here. So we've been in Shelbyville since, 2009, I think.
Yeah, all right. So obviously a very specialized skill. What was the genesis of the instrument making?
Well, I originally was a professional player. I mentioned went to school. I went to New England Conservatory in Boston, and Boston Conservatory, to be trained as a applied French horn major. My instrument was the French horn. Was really good at it in high school, and my parents were musical, so they were in the band when they were in the high school, and my dad was a trombone player. And he just loved music, so it perpetuated into me learning the French horn. And I went to school in New England. I got a summertime job as I was going to school, an apprentice with a man who repaired and customized brass instruments only. No woodwinds or anything like that. So I learned how, I worked with him actually for 6 years. And apprenticed with him. He pretty much taught me fabrication and how to use the machinery. I don't have any formal training as a machinist or anything. I just kind of learned by doing it. I think I had the Lord blessed me with the gift to be able to be mechanical so I could figure things out. But he was a great inspiration for me because he learned from a lot of old craftsmen. And that's the type of training I got. It wasn't just no computerized machines, nothing. It was all hands-on stuff. So I worked with him and then eventually decided I'd open my own business and moved back to Florida to do that.
His name?
Robert Osmun, O-S-M-U-N. Okay. Robert Osmun, yeah.
All right. So talk to me for a moment about some of the skills that you had to master that he shared with you as you undertook that apprenticeship.
Well, it turned out while I was working with him, he really didn't like to work on the larger instruments like tubas, sousaphones, the larger brass instruments. So I was a fairly big guy and had a lot of strength, so he put me on those. And I would learn how to remove dents, disassemble, reassemble, fabricate braces or patches or anything that the instruments needed, total reconditioning or overhauls on these instruments, and also then learning some customizing to them that players wanted them to be better, either work better with better valve linkage or just better playability. The music industry, as far as the instrument is concerned, is no different than just about any other industry with a product like a tennis racket or a golf club. If it can make you play better or easier or give you that little bit of an edge or just something you're looking for in an instrument, believe it or not, there's a lot you can do to a brass instrument to get it to do that. So he taught me a lot of those type of things. But mainly customizing and repair. He didn't make instruments, but through all of the customizing and repair of from piccolo trumpets up to tubas, I learned there. And just having experience to the point of he gave me sort of the position of working one-on-one with the tuba players and the large brass instrument players. So it was kind of neat.
I'm curious about the jump to creating instruments from scratch. Is that where your business started, or did you also start with just the repair?
Same thing. I started as a repair shop, customizing repair brass instruments in Orlando, Florida. It was a good place. The reason why I landed there as opposed to going back to South Florida is in the 80s. Mid-80s, when we opened up shop, Orlando was a boom town for music and entertainment. You had Walt Disney World, Circus World, the downtown Orlando functions. There's all kinds of theaters and shows and such, so it employed a lot of live music. So I thought that was a good basis for us to, we knew there were going to be a lot of musicians, and there was, and especially brass instruments. I don't know why. Probably Orlando had more per capita trumpet players than just about any city. Trumpets and trombone and brass instruments, really good ones. And they were good from the standpoint of they're hungry for something to make their instrument better, as opposed to just buying an off-the-rack instrument, even making that more customized and play better for them. That's where it started. And then as we made components and change certain components on a trumpet or a trombone, that sort of evolved into, well, we're at the point now where we could just make our own product and really customize across the board. Because even with another manufacturer's instrument, you can only go so far with it. But to the point where you've already changed everything, now it's no longer that instrument. So that's when we started Lawler Trumpets, and really focused on the trumpets. And your question might be why trumpets, but mainly because there were a lot of good trumpet players in that area, and it was a real good sounding board for us for our own product.
Do you recall when it was you created that first instrument? And this one I may completely on my own and where it ended up?
Number one, so to speak. I don't think, well, I know there's not an actual number one or number two. We still, even though it had our name on it, it was 90% our instrument, but it pretty much morphed from a stock instrument to a real custom instrument. And probably when we were with our trumpets, because of the small numbers that I make, we did have our valves and our casings made by a major manufacturer for us, because that's a repetitive piece. That part is always the same. So bells and lead pipes and slides and tubing and all of that rest of the instrument is what made a playability difference. So our first, we can track back with our serial number lists to about number 50 as being the really first fully instrument. We at least have record of that one. The first 50 were probably still, they may have been other brand instruments that we had a lot of our components hung on that that guys use pretty consistently. But I started keeping track around on from number 50 above. We have a serial number list that started with tracking number 50, and we finished up with a little over 1,500. There's 1,537, I believe, is going to be our last one. I'm in the process. We'll be finishing up the last Lawler trumpet here probably in the end of August.
Did your parents, I don't know if they're still with you or not, but what did they think about your move into this area?
They are not with me now. My dad died back in 2004 before we moved to Tennessee. My mom died in 2009. We had moved to Tennessee. Often wondered what my dad would have thought. He probably would have said, why Tennessee? But I think if he had experienced it and see where we live and just the nature of the difference between lots of congestion and traffic in South Florida and South Miami as opposed to a lot of open space here.
I was actually referring to your building of the instruments.
Oh, okay. Yeah. As far as the instruments, I had started, since he was a trombone player, and he often asked me, why trumpets too? You know, since you're a French horn player, why didn't you build French horns? And a lot of people ask me that. But I kind of thought, well, trumpets, I could play a trumpet enough to tell if it's, you know, if there's issues or problems or better or worse. But I wasn't making the instruments for me. And so my dad said, well, why not trombones? And I said, well, I think that usually, believe it or not, that's the progression of most brass manufacturers. They start out small, like a one-man operation, and they'll make trumpets, and the next thing they go to is trombones. If you look at the history of like Vincent Bach, that's a very popular brand of instruments. He started with trumpets and eventually trombones. But I think my parents, as far as my dad was concerned, he'd be pretty proud of the fact that continued with it. You know, and my mom, she loved Tennessee. I think she would eventually have moved here. She spent a lot of time here and then still some time down in Florida because I have a sister who lives down there. So, you know, but my dad was always excited about the music aspect. In fact, he was a little disappointed I stopped playing. I had to make a decision because I was playing professionally too and coming out of school and such, and he was just so excited about who I was playing for, and did a lot of touring and such with orchestras, and he kind of lived that through his son, I think, being able to do that.
Yeah, all right. Talk to me for a moment about the number of hours that you put into the trumpets, first of all, and the trombones now, and if you have any other, you know, kind of gee whiz numbers that are associated with the business, then I'd like to hear those as well.
Well, as far as the trumpets were concerned, we not only made trumpets, we made flugelhorns, cornets. They are two other instruments that trumpet players will play. So our accumulation of the over 1,500 horns in the 30-year time we did it, includes the cornets and flugelhorns. I also made quite a few instruments for the U.S. Army. We made what's called the herald trumpets, and those are the long trumpets, ceremonial trumpets that have the banners hanging down. We made them for the Army Herald Trumpeters, which is the elite group that plays at all of the ceremonies for any dignitary or president or whatever that comes over at the White House, any kind of, or if the president does any kind of ceremony or anything at the White House, they would always use these trumpets. And to the point where I think we made two sets for them over the years of about 12 instruments in the set. And one of our B flat herald trumpets, which is the normal keyed one, played quite often, is in the Smithsonian Institute. They have a Spirit of America section in the military section, and they just, since this, the Army Herald Trumpets has a very long heritage, and I think they're over, you know, several hundred years old, and in order to honor that, they placed those instruments, I guess they took them out of service and put them in the Smithsonian as a marker for them, and that was quite a neat thing that happened. So as far as that's concerned, the herald trumpets we've also made for Walt Disney World, because they use them in a lot of their productions. And but for the most part, we were making some trombones while we were still based in Florida, and made a handful, or I'd say we probably made more than that. We probably made about 20 or 30, just here and there, custom one-off things for guys. But always been in the back of my mind that that's something I'd want to pursue, and kind of fully. But when we made our move from Florida to Tennessee, I kind of put the trombones on the back burner and really concentrated on the flugelhorns, which is a B-flat keyed instrument, just like the trumpet. Our flugelhorn was becoming very, very popular, and so it took up a lot of time, and I just couldn't get back to the trombones. But we decided in 2013 that I would start tooling up for them, to the point where we make 95% of it in-house. There is one set of tubes that we do, precision made tube that we do have made for us, but we make all the components in-house. And that was some of the motivating factor for the move to trombones. Was I've been doing the trumpets for over 30 years. We've got a fair amount of out there. I see a lot of them come in for service and restoration. I've even restored some of my own horns that were, you know, nearly 30 years old, which was kind of neat. So in repair and such. So that's still, we still work on our trumpets, but as far as production of them, we stopped in 2016. And the trombones have been just taken off. They've been, we went into full production last year with them in 2015. Well, actually 2 years ago in 2015, and this year in 2017. I've got enough to keep me busy for a while. So it's really kind of grand.
The construction of mm-hmm. the instruments, I'm curious how it works. Do you work on a single instrument from beginning to end, or do you do like sets of components?
Well, I can answer that question with yes on both parts. As far as assembly of the instrument, it's all done in one instrument at a time. There are some parts that I pre-make because of the time factor for them. Right now, early in our stages with the trombone, production-wise, I'm pretty much making them one at a time. I don't have a shop full of trombones right now because as soon as I make them, they leave because they're made to order, and naturally, when it's done, player doesn't want me to hang on to it. I can't keep it a secret. He wants to know it's done, so it leaves. But I do make some of the parts ahead of time. Is what I try to do is schedule is at least 2 weeks every other month, just part making on those small parts that we those repetitive parts that we know we're going to be using for no matter what combination they pick is going to be used on that instrument. So the materials we use for that is basically we have a solid stock brass, tubing, and then sheet brass. And so depending on what part it is, there's 40 pieces in a trombone, in a straight tenor trombone is what we make. And then a lot of guys call it a commercial small bore tenor trombone. And so those 40 pieces come together, and they're individually made and then come together as an assembly. But we're not like the large manufacturers where the instrument is assembled in sub-assemblies and then it comes together as one. I actually build around the major component and build everything around that. The major component being the bell flare. That's the largest part of a trombone. So once that's made, then everything is built on that. Whereas a mass producer would make different sections of it and then assemble it, put it in a fixture, tighten it down, and assemble it. The reason for that is it's what everybody will say about our instruments versus any other is that they are very easy playing. They call it the blow. It's very easy. It's very even feeling and very responsive. When an instrument is made in fixtures where it's forced together, it puts stress on different parts, and the players can detect that stress by the instrument all of a sudden having poor intonation, not playing well in tune, poor response, or just the instrument has a break or change in its timbre as it goes up and down. Lots of things, lots of variables in especially assembly. So I take great care and time on final assembly that we have no stress in the instrument as much as possible when it's soldered together. That's how it's assembled, is either soft solder or hard solder joints, and they're just the difference in temperature. Where we use a much higher temperature brazing solder for the hard joints that are going to take a lot of stress. Even in the bell section, as it's formed, it has a seam that's brazed in the sheet brass in order to make the shape of the bell. Lots of heating and softening and such to form it. And those are all done by a technique called spinning. And the spinning of the bell flare is actually forming it as it spins onto a steel mandrel that has the final shape that we want. So those shapes and tapers in the instrument are very important, is because that's what gives it a certain characteristic and sound and feel. And also what's called the bore size, and that's in the case of a small bore tenor. It's measured in thousandths, and the most common is the 500 bore, and that's a half inch basically. And the 500 bore trombone is pretty much the one that most guys in a big band or a commercial setting, like someone like Glenn Miller would play, would be a 500 bore small bore tenor. It has a very, very unique tenor voice that they're trying to get, and that bore size does it. As opposed to a symphony type trombone, which is usually larger because of a type sound they want to get. We don't deal with those at all. I'm strictly our specialty is the small bore tenors, and we have a unique feature with our trombones too that's different from others, in the sense of what's called a removable bell flare, or affectionately known as the screw bell. And the screw bell allows two things. It detaches so that you can change that flare to different alloys and different rim diameters, and those alloys and rim diameter and thickness of the alloy will change the color of the sound. So players like that. They can make that trombone play in a small, intimate jazz combo with a dark, warm, buttery sound. And then they can put on a flare that, if they have to do a salsa band gig and they need a lot of punch and a lot of brightness and a lot of edge in the sound easily, so they have an easier time at it, the instrument will do that. So it really opens up the versatility of the horn. And the benefit, another added benefit, especially these days, is for musicians who travel, that since that bell flare comes off, it goes in a case that's much smaller than your normal trombone case. And musicians covet their instruments because once they find a good one, they like to hang on to it for as long as they can. And having it by your side on an airplane or up in the overhead versus putting it underneath, well, we've all had luggage. We know what luggage looks like a lot of times. His instrument's very delicate, so it's something that a lot of players are coming to us because of that feature, and it's pretty neat. But really, it started because we wanted to make the instrument versatile, and that's just an added bonus.
Talk to me for just a moment about just one aspect of the construction that is especially time-consuming or requires a particular amount of skill.
Well,
you know, maybe the most difficult part to manufacture.
It's going to be across the board on all brass instruments, and that is the bell flare. The bell flare is the most important from the standpoint of your end result and sound, and as I was mentioning before, it starts from a piece of sheet brass, and this sheet brass can vary from as thin as 20 thousandths thick up to 25 thousandths thick. That's the range I work in. So if we use the 20 thousandths thick, that's less than a thumbnail thickness. And the brass is very malleable. It is very easy to form, but what brass wants to do is when you do form it, whether you're hammering on it or bending it, just like anything else, it wants to harden. And when we make what's called the stem of the bell flare, the longest part of it, it's a cone shape. It starts as a flat sheet, folded over in half, and then curled on the edges in order to seam that up with brazing material. A very high temperature brazing material. Then it is that seam, since it overlaps a little bit, I hammer it down thin because it's overlapping. I want to try to get it as thin as I can back to its normal thickness with this joint. And then a lot of hammering and forming on trying to get that thing back round again. I have to heat it several times in order to keep it soft, because once I start hammering on it, it's going to harden again. I don't want it to crack. So then, once it's initially a very rough looking cone, it goes onto a steel mandrel there's a process called drawing. And drawing, material drawing like that, tube drawing, this is a tapered piece. So We simply just can't take a cylinder and pull it or draw it through the cylinder like you would a piece of tubing, making a cylinder of tubing. So it is drawn or pulled through a expanding die, and that die smashes tightly against the small point. And as it's pulled through and the taper gets larger, that die expands and pushes that brass onto the steel mandrel in order to take the form of that mandrel, which is your form of the bell. And that takes a lot of time. There's a lot of hours involved in just the stem section. But then we have the flare section. And since I make my instruments in two pieces, stem and flare, they're coupled together by a threaded collar. and that threaded collar is made out of phosphor bronze and threaded. So we turn that out of solid phosphor bronze, and then is tapered on the inside and soldered onto those two pieces to made up. But the flare has to be made out of sheet brass too, to match the thickness of the stem. And it's made out of a circle of brass. We have a circle cutter that cuts an exact circle of brass. It's just a 1950s hand crank circle cutter. And once you have your circle, and we mount it onto the spinning lathe, which has the steel mandrel that it spins, and then that sheet brass is formed down very slowly on that mandrel, several times going back to heat it to make it soft again, because each time I make two passes on it, it'll harden, and if I kept going, it would crack it eventually. So that's the part that took, when I transitioned even from doing trumpets to trombones, the larger you get into these, even up to tuba-sized bells, it gets harder and harder to figure out how much pressure, how soft it needs to be in order to make it through that process. So there was a fair amount of trial and error, you know, a lot of cracked bells, a lot of split seams and such, until I just got the right amount of heat and the right amount of softness to form it, so that by the time it's finished, it's not too hard and it doesn't stay too soft, because then it becomes vulnerable for breakage, you know. But anyway, and then in that bell flare too is also beaded on the end. It gets a like you'd see on the end of a paper cup, a nice soft rounded bead, so it's no longer like a razor edge. It's partly for integrity and strength around the rim of that bell. But there's a wire I feed in there as it wraps around it, and then that wire keeps the integrity of that rim less vulnerable to damage. All of this does play a role in how it ends up playing too. The size of that bead, whether it's soldered or unsoldered, the size of the wire, and we even do a flat bead, that sort of thing. We can really run the gamut with what the end result. He tells me what he wants, how it wants to sound, and I know the process that I'm going to need to get to that. What alloy, what thickness, what temperament, whether it be, we can do as bell flares with an 8-inch rim diameter at the 8 1/4 at the biggest. But on traditionally, most trombones don't go, small bore tenor trombones don't go above the 8-inch mark. But they go down as small as 7 inches. 7, 7.5. So our most popular sizes in the bell rims are anywhere from 7.5 to 8 inch. And that rim size will make a difference in the way it plays and the feedback the player hears on the instrument.
Obviously you've had some success placing instruments. Tell me about some of the placements that you're proudest of.
Well, right now in the trombones, we've got a guy named Ray Mason who's with Lady Antebellum, and he is currently based in New York City. He is a freelancer there, and he plays on one of our 500 board trombones, and he also has toured with so many other people I can't even mention, but we're quite proud of him because he is a wonderful player. He's a great guy, and that's a lot of exposure for us, for the trombone. Got another guy in Chicago who is one of their top freelance players named Scott Bentall, and Scott, he's played with kind of like me. When you ask him who he's played for, probably most of the list of the people he's played for, they're dead now. but he stays quite busy in Chicago as a freelancer, and he too really helped me a lot in prototyping the instruments and feedback, because he's played a lot of different brand instruments. And my instrument is really I reverse engineered it from an old instrument that you can't get anymore. And that instrument's called a Martin Committee. And the Martin Band Instrument Company went out of business in the late 70s when the influx of the imported instruments came about, Japanese, Taiwanese instruments. I really think, I can't prove this, but I really think it was as well as a lot of other small builders like that. And they, I say small, but you know, they were, they made other instruments too, trumpets, trombones, saxophones, things like that. But I really just got the sense they didn't want to compete by cheapening their instrument or coming out with a price line only type instrument. And a lot of manufacturers shut down. But anyway, as far as the who's playing the instruments, I've got instruments in our trumpets too, probably not necessarily household names. I've done some work for some household names like John, let's see, and Wayne Newton, and who plays trumpet in his act, and just other. But for the most part, I've got a lot of really good players that aren't necessarily household names, but they play in some really great bands. And but right now with the trombone, we've got them going all over the place. The trombone I'm working on now is going to a player in Dubai. So that's a new one for us. I've got them in instruments in China and Japan and Germany and Norway and just all over. England and Europe and the United States, but Dubai is the first one for us. So I thought that's a first trombone, you know, and never had a trumpet go to Dubai. But anyway, I'm really looking forward to that. But it's we have just really tried to. We've never been like the big boys. We can't be, in a sense, the big manufacturers where we can give instruments away to players that will endorse us and stuff like that. Instruments have always been in the guys have them because they like them. And we've never done endorsements or anything like that. But I've got guys still playing on my instruments that... you know, we built back in the first instrument back in 1980, well, our own instrument in 87. So it's that's kind of neat.
Tell me what it is that you think keeps you at this. Is there any particular part of this that's, you know, as you're doing an instrument each time is kind of like a golden moment? Well, I'm looking for motivations, you know, what it is that gets you up in the morning and back in the shop.
Well, just like our slogan says on our trombones, they're made for the glory of the Lord. I mean, we evangelize through our business. We just really want to bring glory to God and because he has blessed me with a talent on loan from him that, I mean, I can be honest with you that I told my wife the same thing. I don't know how I can do what I do. like I said, I have not had any formal training as a machinist or a metallurgist or anything like that. I can look at something, like I told you, we sort of reverse engineered an old instrument that we wanted to get a vintage sound from, but have more of the modern expectations that an instrument guys would expect from a horn now. And I really think my faith is the important key to this, is that I'm not going in to try to prove that I can make the best trombone or the best trumpet or the best brass instrument because it's got my name on it. I'm going in each day to bring glory to God with the work I do. That's my standard. Because if I try to keep my own standard or think I'm going to please everybody, which I must admit, there was a time in my career where I thought, you know, it really hit me hard if someone didn't play my instrument or they didn't like it, because there's a lot out there to choose from. But I just through my faith and in the Lord, he just showed me that, well, that's because I'm making them for just man. If I put them together and build them, and he'll show me, the glory goes to him. And so that's really my number one motivating factor. And secondly, my wife, she's not a musician. She plays the radio. And I think that's somewhat of a comfort in a sense. I know married couples that are both musicians, and musicians are competitive, let's face it. Just like anything, I suppose, whether you're a sports person or a music person, as a player, they get competitive. So I've made instruments for husband and wife couples. You know, they buy a husband and wife, and they each buy an instrument, and one's a little different from the others, and theirs is better than hers, and his is better than, you know, just back and forth. But my wife, she's not a musician, so I can actually say, hey, what do you think of this? And she'll go, well, there's a spot here, or there's something here, an imperfection there, or whatever it may be, which she doesn't know why. She just sees it. Something that probably maybe not would be important to a musician. And sometimes I have to say, well, that's not really imperfection. That's the way it's made. But she's been very inspirational to me as far as, for one, focusing on why I'm making them. And, but like I told you at the beginning, when it was very difficult to start with your own instrument in the instrument world, because I can remember the first trade shows I would go to and have 8 or 10 instruments laying out on a table specifically geared for whether it be like a jazz educator show or something like that. And people looking at the sign that says Lawler, looking down at the trumpets, and then just walking away. And it took 2 years for someone, after they had been played by a few people, would finally say, hey, there's the Lawler trumpets or trombones, let's try them. You know, it was kind of, you know, obviously, when you focus on that kind of thing, it can let you down. But definitely my faith has been, that's why each day when I start a project, start an instrument to finish, it's just... I think that that motivation is there, that he gave me the talent to do it. I can't explain it sometimes as to how I figured it out or how it gets done, but it's one instrument at a time.
Yeah. And how many kind of one-man instrument building shops are there in the country?
Well, as far as small bore tenor trombones, I am probably one of three in the country. Trumpets, as far as trumpet makers, there's a few more. I would fare to guess maybe 5 or 6. It's a very small, when you're talking nationwide. Unlike the European trade, which is, you know, it's much more prevalent in Germany and Vienna and in the European Bloc nations as far as small brass instrument builders. It's just because the real issue, and as far as my premise with what we build too, is more traditional. It's, you know, there are other builders who have a little bit more modern way out looking instruments and offer things that we don't offer, but that's kind of the way the music industry is. It's like on a bell curve. It goes one way and then comes back to the middle, and then goes the extreme the other way and comes back to the middle. When it comes to equipment, whether it's their finish or their weight or their size, it always comes back to the middle. I found that to be true over the years, so that's where we stay, right in the middle. And so we have a very traditional looking instrument. It's kind of the Art Deco era of type, cosmetically as it looks, and finish wise and all that sort of thing. We're not way out, and guys like that, because trombone, probably more so than trumpet, is a little more traditional there's some traditional desires there versus the trumpet players. They, whatever better mousetrap they can do, they, you know, it's different. The personalities are really different. It's that way with all brass. Your tuba players have a certain desire. French horn players have a certain desire. Trumpet, trombone players have a certain desire. And mostly French horn and trombone players don't deviate from the norm, what they consider the norm, too much. Whereas your trumpet players will. They don't, they like colors, they like flash, they like, you know, just an instrument that will do what they need to do at any cost. But they change a lot. You know, they're not as, I find that I've probably of my trumpet customers, players, I'll have players that have three or four or five of my instruments, or have made them several over the years, that one person. Whereas we see with trombones, usually the guy I'm making a new trombone for has had his trombone since he was in high school, or since, you know, he even found an old trombone that he liked. The newer stuff doesn't appeal to them quite as much. You know, it's probably from a business standpoint not the business model. You know, you don't make a new product for the old market. But in the trombone world, it's a tradition. There are certain things you don't deviate too far from. Even at the cost of, if it plays a little easier, a little better, they kind of drift back towards the traditional.
All right, well, I think that's all the questions that I have. Anything else that your expertise suggests that we perhaps should discuss before we stop?
I don't think so. I think we've covered it.
All right, good enough.